Good morning, everybody. Why don't we go ahead and get started? Welcome to Develop, Package, and Deploy Your Apps for NanoServer. My name is Andrew Mason. I'm a Principal Program Manager in the Windows Server team working on NanoServer. How many people have installed NanoServer? All right, a few hands. How many people have their apps, code, tools running on NanoServer? All right, fewer hands. So good, hopefully we'll help you get all the answers to what you need today. So NanoServer is an installation option of Windows Server 2016, which has the built-in layers of security, the software-defined data center functionality, and the cloud-ready application platform. You've probably seen this slide in other Windows Server sessions. So NanoServer actually plays a role across all of those. I'm really going to focus on the cloud-ready application platform. I'll touch a little bit on what NanoServer is all about to begin with, but then I'll dive into how you make your code run on NanoServer. So just to start out a little bit, you know, there are a certain set of tenets of development. You know, you want to develop your code, you want to minimize your dependencies, and that gets more important now that we have Server Core and NanoServer, whereas before, everything was always available everywhere. You could always count on APIs and DLLs being on every install of Windows Server. Well, that changes a lot, especially with NanoServer, so we'll talk some about that. You want to be able to package up your code and know your dependencies, so when it gets deployed, if somebody else is deploying it for you, they know what has to be installed on that server rather than just saying, well, I don't know what this needs, so I'm just going to install a server with a desktop, and you end up with all sorts of things you don't need for your app on that server machine. Use intent-based configuration. You want to be able to deploy your app, run your app, test it in production, hopefully, and secure it, of course, and don't let that be an afterthought. So in the past, Windows Server didn't really have a point of view on these things. There were lots of different ways to do these. There's really no set guidance or clear set of choices or recommendation. You know, you could use MSI, you could use WebPI, you could use Xcopy Deploy, you could do a whole bunch of different methods of, for example, installing your app. With Windows Server 2016, we're really taking a point of view. There's really two models with Server 2016. There's the traditional ops model, and there's the emerging container model. And so Server 2016, we're really working hard to resolve the interface between dev and ops. And so you'll see how NanoServer plays into that and a bunch of the technologies we built to support NanoServer. So on the traditional ops model, you know, you want to develop targeting NanoServer. That's the platform we're recommending everybody target. It's the lowest attack surface, lower servicing footprint, lowest on-disk footprint. It follows the just enough OS model, which I'll talk about a little more in a minute, where you can build the configuration you need for what you're running on that server, rather than having a whole bunch of additional functionality installed that somebody has to configure, manage, potentially misconfigures, which then impacts the app running on top of the server or exposes the server to security vulnerabilities. So packaging, we have a new app installer that I'm going to talk about called Windows Server App Installer, which is built on top of AppX. This is available in NanoServer, Server Core, and Server with a Desktop. So it's a new unified installer across the server platform. Then configuration, you know, we have desired state configuration available in Windows Server to help you do your configuration. Package management's available. I'll touch on this a little bit, but I won't go in depth on that. And then you can run your apps, obviously, on a physical machine and a virtual machine with NanoServer in either a Windows Server or Hyper-V container. So it's available for both of those as the platform. Test using Pester, and then secure your apps using things like just enough administration. So really today I'm going to be focusing on targeting NanoServer, Windows App Installer, touch a little bit on package management. Then on the container side of things, you know, that changes things a little bit. You still want to target NanoServer. You could either use Win32, you could use .NET Core, or you could use your favorite open source app framework. And same thing applies for NanoServer across the installation installation platforms you can use. And then the container model, you know, there's very container specific and Docker ways of doing a lot of these other things, so it shifts the model quite a bit. Now, a lot of enterprises, when they're looking at containers, are really looking at how they comply the traditional model because they want to ensure compliance and things. So for a while, we'll probably see a mix of models even when using containers. Now, cloud has really changed expectations. And so NanoServer has really been built to meet a lot of those expectations. So when you're looking at cloud applications, really the big thing is availability. You know, you can't have that scheduled downtime for the cloud app like you used to be able to do with, say, your Exchange server or whatever. So the app has to be up and available all the time. And that's where hyperscale comes into it. You know, you have to be able to scale up when demand increases. And you have to have that agility. So be able to redeploy new versions of it and be able to spread versions across to your data centers around the world, whatever it happens to be. And so Windows Server 2016 really provides an agile app platform, so you can deploy on physical, you can deploy on virtual machines, containers, you can use Service Fabric, and then with Azure and Azure Stack, you start from virtual machines and could go all the way up to running Azure Functions. So over time, you'll see a lot of overlap between the two platforms and the ability to deploy your apps either on-prem or in the cloud environment. And so these different deployment options around containers and things with Windows Server 2016 provide a lot of flexibility and benefits both for IT pros and for developers. So sort of for your existing apps on the IT pro side, there's the secure fabric for VMs with shielded virtual machines. Then you can containerize existing apps as well. So server cores available in the container allows you to move existing apps over quite easily to a container environment for both IT pros or developers. And then going forward with cloud-borne applications or cloud-native applications, developers can take full advantage of cloud containers. So let's talk some about how you target NanoServer when you're writing your code. So NanoServer is an installation option, as I mentioned, following that just enough OS principle. So really, it's the smallest of the three installation options that come with Server 2016. It has a lot of capabilities if you want to run it as your cloud host or your virtualization host, but we've also done a lot to make it a great application host, especially for containers. So if you go to any of the container sessions Taylor Brown's presenting, he's got some great numbers showing the performance benefits and startup time benefits of NanoServer in a container versus server core in a container. So we've done a lot of work to build it and make it work for cloud native applications and running containers. We have full developer support, unlike what we did with server core. We learned a lot from that experience, so we'll talk some about that. Now, it is the next step in our cloud journey, and this is NanoMan. Somebody noticed I have a NanoMan sticker on my laptop. If you go down to the expo hall, we have a NanoServer booth. We have NanoMan stickers. There's comic book and posters, and there's also a HoloLens virtual experience with NanoMan. So if you want to try out a HoloLens, there's an opportunity there, as long as the line's not too long. So back to the real content. Just enough OS models. So unlike server core and server with a desktop, none of the roles and features are in the side-by-side folder. You have to inject those as you build your image. So it allows you to build the OS image that you need for your application. You don't have a lot of extra binaries and extra disk space consumed on your server installation. So NanoServer really lets you build the server you need for the app with the services that app requires and not have a lot of extra pieces installed. As far as key roles and features go, we have Hyper-V, scale-out file server, clustering, DNS server, and then IIS. And with IIS, we also support ASP.NET Core. .NET Core is also available as well. We have full server hardware driver support. So if you're running on a physical machine, you have drivers available. Defender's available as an optional package. And then the System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and Operation Manager agents are available as well. Now on the cloud application platform side, like we've been talking about, cloud native apps, born in the cloud apps, things following those patterns. So we do have a subset of Win32. So the Win32 API surface area in NanoServer is smaller than what's available in Server Core. I mentioned .NET Core and ASP.NET Core, desired state configuration, package management, and then a lot of the open source app frameworks run on top of NanoServer as well. So we have blog posts on how to install various app frameworks on top of NanoServer. We're working on an additional blog post, but you're able to run Node.js and other types of apps on top of NanoServer as well. And then it is available everywhere. So you can use it as your physical host, you can use it in a virtual machine, or you can use it in a Windows Server or Hyper-V container. So we learned a lot from the developer experience we provided with Server Core, which was basically a page on MSDN that listed all the APIs available in Server Core. Wasn't very friendly to developers, wasn't very easy to figure out what APIs were supported or not supported in the Server Core environment. So for those that really liked that experience, for NanoServer, we still have one of those pages. We have a NanoServer page that lists all the APIs available. We've also done a lot of work to give it a full developer experience. So we have integration in the SDK. We also have a Visual Studio template that you can download. And then you can, when you go to new project, you can actually select NanoServer as your application target. And it gives you the ability to have the full developer Visual Studio developer experience. So you get the arrow squiggles if you start using an API that's not supported in NanoServer. You have autocomplete of just the APIs available in NanoServer. So we really try to make the experience and the ability to target NanoServer and get your code running on NanoServer much easier. And we also have full remote debugging support. So you can remotely debug your apps running on top of a NanoServer. So let me switch over here and show some of this. So I have Win 10 Anniversary Edition installed on my laptop here. I have NanoServer running in a virtual machine, and I've already installed the remote debugger binaries in there. Instead of doing Hello World, since you know this is the big party for Windows Server release of Windows Server and NanoServer, I did a Windows Server 2016 and NanoServer Rock little app here. And so if I run this locally, you'll see it flash by probably too quickly. Yes. So it does work. So I've already installed the remote debugger. So we have a new PowerShell module called NanoServer Debugger that you can download as part of your Visual Studio template. And I will import that module. And then let me connect up to my NanoServer machine here. So I'm going to use PowerShell Remoting to connect into my NanoServer virtual machine on my laptop here. And then this particular registry key is very useful. This has been around since Server 2012, so it was there in 2012, 2012 R2. And this allows you to query the registry and find out what you're running on. So if you need to adjust the way your scripts or your code are behaving based on whether you're on NanoServer, Server Core, or Server with a desktop, you can use this registry key to do that. And so in Server 2016, there's this new NanoServer level. Now, while you can query the registry directly, there's also a PowerShell command that called get computer info, which is sort of like system info, but on steroids, because it shows you other things like your Hyper-V configuration, device guard, and lots of other information in here. So it's a very handy PowerShell commandlet if you want to get more information about the computer, but you can also filter that down to just the server level. And you'll see it comes back and shows me I'm running on NanoServer. So that's a handy commandlet to be aware of as well. So let me go over to my demo folder. You'll see I don't have my app on there at the moment. This is for the next demo. So let me go back to my laptop. So NanoServer has PowerShell Core in it, so you can use PowerShell Remoting. And we have all the new capabilities of PowerShell. So like one of the new things is PowerShell has this copy item commandlet. In Server 2016, they've added from session to session. So as long as you have a remoting session to a particular machine, you can add dash to session or dash from session and copy binaries to and from. So you don't have to do a net use or set up another network connection. You can just do that through your remoting session. So I copied over my executable, my symbol file. Let me go back in my PowerShell session here just to show I now have the new two NanoServer files over there. And if I run it on my NanoServer machine, you can see it prints out. So we're clean. We run within the NanoServer API boundary. So let me go back and start the debugger. So now when I switch over to Visual Studio, I'm going to switch to remote Windows debugger. Go into properties, and you can see it switched over here. So essentially, you have to give it I've already populated it here, but you give it the path to the application on the remote machine. You give it the IP address, in this case, of the remote machine, because I don't have DNS set up on my laptop. And then I just did remote with no authentication for this demo. So now if I step through, help if I set the breakpoint first, huh? Let me set a breakpoint and run it. So now if you notice at the bottom, I'm getting my I variable showing up, and every time I hit F5, it's going to increment that value. So I'm remotely debugging my NanoServer app here, and I can flip all the way through to 10, and it returns. So the way I create a new project for this, and I used our new template. So if I do new project, if you scroll down to the bottom after you install this template, you'll see you can pick NanoServer application. So what that will give you is, if I do git file version, you can see it's showing me the different git file version APIs that are available. And it's happy about that, but if I do something like dialog box, since we don't have GUI, you'll notice it didn't show up in there. It also gave me the red error squiggles because that API is not available in NanoServer. So it makes it much easier to target your code, so you can either use this when you're writing new code. If you have existing code, you can download this template, create a new project, copy your code in, then you can scroll through and see where the red error squiggles are and make any changes you might need. Now, related to this, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback that PowerShell remoting is great, using remote GUIs are great, but you know, when I've got some code that I'm really trying to debug, I like to be able to touch the machine itself and do things on the machine. So one of the things we added in the GA of NanoServer is this new switch. Actually, we had the switch before, but we made a change to it. So when you're building your NanoServer image, there's an image building commandlet you can use, PowerShell commandlet. We've also created a GUI that layers on top of that, but there's a dash development switch. And if you include the dash development switch, well, what you'll get, I'm booting another NanoServer VM here. It goes pretty quick, but you now get PowerShell. So I'm actually running on a NanoServer machine with a PowerShell interface. So I do git computer, I'm drawing a blank. Git computer info, there we go. Git computer info, server level. See, it's gonna load all the information and tell me I'm running on NanoServer. So for development and debug purposes, if you really want local access to your virtual machine or your machine you're trying to run your code on with NanoServer, if you build an image with dash development, it will give you this experience. You boot up into PowerShell. Now, this is sort of hidden under the dash development switch because you notice it booted up and took me right into PowerShell. I'm essentially running as local system on this virtual machine. So it is not something that should be used in production right now. But for developers out there that want to debug things, troubleshoot things, and want that local access to the system, you know, for whatever reason, the tool you want to use doesn't work remotely, it doesn't work through PowerShell remoting, you have this option now. Hopefully in the future, we'll make this available more broadly, so it will be an experience that you can use in production, but right now, it just boots you up into PowerShell running as a local system. And probably noticed how quickly it booted up, but you can also, you know, actually my 5-second timer will probably take longer than the shutdown process itself. Yep, boom, it's off. So you can see some of the benefits of NanoServer right there are how quickly, because it's so small, how quickly it boots, how quickly it shuts down, how quickly it reboots. We actually have a demo video running in the booth that shows it from running, shut down and reboot in 8 seconds. So let me go to the slides. All right, so as far as server application development goes, as I mentioned, NanoServer is sort of this deep refactoring. We've removed a lot of functionality from the system. That's really the target that we want developers to focus on going forward. So let me just build this out. So let me leave the last one off. So NanoServer is the smallest installation option. You can add a bunch of optional features and roles on top of it for other functions in the system. And we'll keep adding more capabilities into NanoServer over time. But like I said, because we've separated everything out as cab files that are separately installable, they won't impact that base footprint. The NanoServer base is going to remain around 460 megabytes. You know, if somebody has an app they need to run or we add another role that requires a bunch of additional functionality, all that will be optional cabs. So if you need that functionality, you deploy it, you have a bigger footprint for that particular role, but you know, a Hyper-V server is 460 megabytes or, you know, one of your apps will be 460 megabytes if it's not pulling in a bunch of additional dependencies. On top of that, you have server core, which is about 5.5 gigabytes. So it brings in a whole bunch of additional functionality. You know, it's great for running full .NET apps right now, both in a container or in a virtual machine, but it does have a lot of additional capabilities in there that you may not need for your application. On top of that, you have server with a desktop, which brings in all the GUI capabilities and IE and Cortana and all that stuff. Really not something you want your apps running on to give you that most locked-down experience, but for scenarios where you need that local GUI interface to run tools or other apps, it's available. If you're running remote desktop host, of course, you need that full GUI experience. Now, I mentioned this before, that NanoServer is available for physical, virtual, or containers. One thing I want to point out is that it's NanoServer and Server Core only in a container. So you cannot run the full desktop Windows server in a container. It sort of defeats the purpose of a container of being small and lightweight and quick startup. So we've only made NanoServer and Server Core available in containers. So if you want to use containers for your applications, you really need to target one of those. So Server Core is sort of your path to NanoServer, helps you start getting down that headless, GUI-less environment. Now, NanoServer, as I've said a couple times, you know, we stripped down the Win32 API, so it's a much smaller surface area. Over the years, you know, Windows has added a lot of APIs and different methods, different ways of accessing some common functions. So like accessing the registry or the file system, there are APIs at various different levels of the OS that you can use in your code. And whichever one code uses is often, you know, what the developer is most familiar with or the first thing they found when they did a search on MSDN. And so, you know, there are things in shell 32 and kernel 32 and user 32 that allow you to access low-level functions of the system. Well, we've removed all those DLLs from NanoServer. Those don't exist in NanoServer because they're much higher level. They drag in a lot of functionality. They increase the footprint. Some of them are fairly frequently serviced. So we removed those all from the system, which initially when we did that caused a lot of common, even command line tools to fail because, you know, again, developers found whichever API they were most familiar with or came up first in their search and used that in their code, and so they tended to break. So they were linking to kernel 32 and shell 32 and other things. So we came up with this piece of technology called reverse forwarders. This gives us a lot of app compatibility. It allows many command line tools and other tools to run on NanoServer without changes. This also helps us get a lot of the open source app frameworks running on top of NanoServer. And so what this does is gives you a way for existing code to run without recompiling. So maybe you're linked to kernel 32. Essentially, the reverse forwarders put a kernel 32 shim in NanoServer. And so if you're calling an API that's supported in NanoServer, your code will start out because it looks like kernel 32 DLLs there. You call that API, kernel 32 gets that request, and if that API works in NanoServer, it forwards it to that new DLL where that API is actually implemented, because we moved a lot of those APIs down to lower level DLLs. If that particular API, like dialog box, isn't implemented, you'll get an error not implemented return call. So as long as your code is not using GUI and it's using pretty standard set of APIs to access low-level functions in the system, it should just run on NanoServer with the reverse forwarders in there. Now, back in TP4 and earlier, this was an optional component that you could install in the system, but like I said, we found a lot of command line tools and other things really needed these, so rather than the pain of, okay, I've deployed this NanoServer image, now I need to run this tool and I don't have that package in there, this is only about 300K or so, so we just put it in by default in NanoServer. Now, this doesn't fully eliminate the need to refactor your code for NanoServer, but it allows you to delay that process. So when you're working on your next version, you can change your links to the new DLLs where those APIs are. And those DLLs are available across the Windows platform, so your code will still run on client, server core, and server with a desktop. And so this slide shows the list of reverse forwarders that are available. You can see some like common dialog 32, not something that you would expect to work on NanoServer, but there's a shim there because there are some low-level type APIs that have been implemented in that DLL that gets used fairly frequently. So if you're using any of those DLLs, your code will probably still run on top of NanoServer, even though a lot of the functionality provided by those doesn't exist. And this is a list of a lot of the open source or common tools that we have running on top of NanoServer with the reverse forwarders. you see Node.js, Ruby, Java, Go, you know, things like Chef and Redis and MySQL, PHP, all work with the reverse forwarder package. And like I mentioned earlier, there's some blogs on the NanoServer blog on TechNet that have instructions for installing a bunch of those, and you'll see us adding more blogs over time. So really, first step, try your app on NanoServer, especially if it's not doing anything with GUI and it's not something that requires a full UI. The reverse forwarders may very well allow it to work. Then that Visual Studio template I mentioned, use that to see, look at your code. Or we also have a tool called NanoServer API Scan. And you can basically point this at a folder where all your binaries live, and it will scan through the API calls in your code and tell you what's supported on NanoServer or what you may be using that's not available in NanoServer. That is posted on the NanoServer blog. For .NET Core, the .NET Core team has a similar tool called API Portability Analyzer. So if you have .NET code, it will tell you what classes you're using and what profile those are available in. So it's a great way to find out what you may need to change in your code. I actually have a demo with API Scan here. So API Scan was a tool that the NanoServer dev team created and we made available publicly, but it's something that we use internally as we're porting things. And so, this up so it's easier to read. So one set of tools that we've used this against, we had another team, actually not the NanoServer team itself, ported a bunch of the command line sysinternal tools. So if you use those when you're debugging your code or troubleshooting issues with your code, if you go up to the sysinternal site, there's a link to download a set of the command line tools that work on NanoServer. And so we asked this other team to do the porting of them. So I've got a couple of the commonly used ones here. Essentially, if you run API Scan against it, it will tell you what needs to change. And the first thing we discovered is NanoServer is 64-bit only. So there is no 32-bit support, no WOW64 in NanoServer. So you need 64-bit versions of your binaries. By default, the majority of the sysinternal tools are 32-bit. Some of them have 32-bit wrappers around a 64-bit app. So we had to split those apart and make them standalone 64-bit. So that's the first thing it will tell you. You can see not a valid 64-bit PE file. So we then compiled 64-bit versions of them, and you can see quite a few things were not found. And in a few places, you know, git computer name w, please use the EX version as a substitution. So we have been enhancing the list of substitutions that we can recommend, but you can see a fairly long list here. And so if you then run that with reverse forwarders, so I'm actually using an old version of the tool that allows me to compare with reverse forwarders. TP5 and on, you don't have to do this, but you can see the list is much shorter. PSExec and PS Service really required one change. And if I look at my reverse forwarders folder, you can see that list that was on the slide, and you can see they're all pretty small. So they're all just shims. If I look at, you know, the shell 32 I have in my system 32 directory on my Win10 machine here, it's over 2 megabytes, whereas the shell 32 shim is 44K. So they're not adding a lot of footprint to the system, but provide a lot of application compatibility. And so then if I look at them with the reverse forwarders, these are the ported versions, you know, they're all clean. And so you may have noticed, there were a bunch of dialog box and other calls that were there. Essentially, we removed those. So that was all there to pop the EULA. If you've ever used the sysinternal tools, it comes up with this dialog box with the licensing agreement in it that you have to accept. It's now all command line. So there's a dash EULA switch on these. So it's pretty easy to remove all the GUI dependencies that the command line tools had. So we've made the Visual Studio template available. We've created API Scan. There's API Portability Analyzer, so you can look at your code and figure out what needs to change to be able to run on top of NanoServer. And like I said, we still have that web page with the list of APIs available in NanoServer if you really want to go through that process or just have that as a reference. So Next, I want to talk something about packaging apps to install on Nano Server. So the big thing is we don't have MSI support. There is no MSI in Nano Server. MSI has a bunch of GUI dependencies. MSI also lets you run custom actions, which essentially let any code run or any executable or script or whatever the author of that MSI wanted to do. Custom actions call outside the MSI and run a random collection of things. And so rather than trying to figure out how the tens or hundreds of thousands of MSIs out there, how somebody could figure out whether that MSI is going to work on Nano Server or not, and that was one of the challenges we had with Server Core. We decided to go down this path of creating a new installer to give you a more reliable install experience. And so it, Windows Server App Installer. So this is all based on AppX. So we're using the same underlying AppX engine and capabilities that are available in clients and have been there since Win 10. This is now available in Nano Server, Server Core, and Server with a Desktop. And so this allows you to declare the actions you're going to take during your installation in a manifest. And we've added a bunch of server-specific extensions to it. So things like NT services. One of the benefits of this is it's common across the platform, so you can create a single installer that will run anywhere. Now, some people are probably wondering, you know, you've heard about AppX, how when you install an AppX package on client, you are constrained and essentially in a sandbox. We've broken through those barriers. So on server, when you're installing something, it has full access to the system. So it's not running in that sandbox AppX environment. It is just like installing an MSI or copying a service over and registering it manually, runs on the system with full control. You have full access. And then it is compatible with Centennial as well. So anybody building a Centennial installer to install on a client machine, Centennial installs will also install on Nano Server, Server Core, Server with a Desktop. So the big difference is you can take Centennial and install on client or server. If you're using WSA and any of the server-specific extension handlers, those are only available on the server platform. So right now, there's no way to install, say, an NT service on client through this. So essentially, it works the same way as writing an AppX installer for client. So it's similar experience, similar capabilities. You just define some additional extensions in your manifest. Now, it supports online install only in Server 2016. We are planning to add offline support, so that you can do, much like when you're building your Nano Server image, as you're installing the roles and features that come inbox, we want you to be able to also put WSAs in there, and so on boot up, everything gets provisioned for you, including the app. So that's coming in the future, we're working on that. And the big difference between MSI and WSA, other than the fact that there's no GUI, is that there is no custom code allowed during installation. So it is like AppX, you're installing your app only. You can't do configuration and make a bunch of settings. So it provides more consistent installation and uninstall, but you do have to change the way configuration happens for your code. So either you have to have some additional utility that gets run after install, or you know, on first startup, the code does the configuration that would have previously been done in your MSI. So it, you know, obviously we do file system and registry, those are common across the AppX platform. The server extensions are there on the slides. We can do NT services, we do WMI providers, you can do IIS modules as well. So we've been working with the IIS team so that you can create a WSA to wrap up your IIS modules and install them this way. Performance counters and ETW providers are all available through our server extensions. And we've been working with a bunch of ISVs and OEMs and things on what other capabilities they have. So we're going to keep adding functionality to this. So if there's something missing from this list, please give us feedback to help us prioritize what we add next. As I mentioned, packaging is the same as doing an AppX on your client. You have your AppX manifest XML, you use make AppX to create it, and then you sign it, and you have it available. And then installation's also consistent with client. So if you're using the PowerShell commandlets, AppX commandlets, those same commandlets are available in server, so you can use the same command lines to install your WSA package. We do also have support for package management for installing WSAs, but you can use just the generalized AppX commandlets. The one advantage package management gives you is it has various providers for repositories like NuGet, so you could post your WSA up in a NuGet repository and use package management to pull it down and install it for you. Whereas when you're using the apex commandlets, you have to get the apex on your system first before you run them. And so I do have a sample WSA that the team built. So let me, using the same VM I had running before, let me enter my PowerShell session here. If I type my password correctly, all right. And let me go back to my demo folder. You may have noticed that I had the apex in there earlier, as well as the certificate I used for building this. I do have the manifest open here in Visual Studio as well. So you can see, looks very much like the apex manifest you would have, except we have this server preview package installed as well. So you define your app just like you would any other apex, your resources, its target device family, properties, so you know this is Microsoft Publisher. You know, you define the application, but then in this extension section is where it gets different. So we have an extension for NT services, and here's we've defined a depth service, it's supposed to auto start, the various parameters available that we wanted to set for it. So this is just a sample, nothing too exciting. We have another NT service with a service description, and this one we've actually defined a dependency on the other service. So you can do all your service definition like you would in an MSI. Here we've defined a WMI provider instaprov sample that gets installed instaprov.mof. We have some performance providers, and then we have an ETW provider that gets installed. So you just define in your apex XML what you're doing on the system and the server extensions. So if I run git service on my nano server machine, you can see it's a list of services there, not very long. Let me see, I've got 31 services running right now on my nano server machine, and nothing with the name service in it. If I run git apex package, you'll see there are no apex packages installed. I'm gonna install my sample, goes pretty quick. If I run git apex package again, you can see I now have that test WSA sample from Contoso with Microsoft as the publisher, or Contoso as the publisher. If I look at my WMI class, I've now registered my instaprov sample that I had. My performance counter exists on the system. My ETW provider is there. If I run git service, I now have 33 services. So you can see it installed those two services and started them up for me in that very quick installation. And they're both there as well. Then uninstalling it is just as easy, other than the fact that you need that long package name. So I copied that earlier. So I removed package, ran pretty quickly. You can see if I query for the ETW provider or the performance provider, it's been removed from the system. So completely unregistered, everything's been cleaned up for me. We have a bunch of resources available for WSA. On our blog, we have a nanoservermicrosoft.com if you have questions or feedback. So if there's functionality you need for your app to install on NanoServer that we haven't already enabled in WSA, please give us that feedback. We're adding, like I said, working with ISVs and OEMs to add more capabilities. Then we've also been working with FireGiant and Flexera for Wix and Install Shield to add functionality and their tools to enable you to output both an MSI and a WSA package. So if you're using either of those to generate an MSI today, you can definitely, today Wix has an extension that allows you to output a WSA as well. Flexera is working on a similar extension to allow you to output a WSA as well. Now, one thing that was not in my WSA list that may be of interest to some of you is drivers, especially for filter system drivers and things like that. So right now, WSA does not have support for drivers. That's one of the things we want to add to it. So that is on our list already. All drivers in Server 2016 for NanoServer remain INF-based. So you can inject drivers in your image when you're installing, or you can online install a driver. So PNP utils available in NanoServer, just like Server Core. So you can use that online to install drivers. For file system or filter drivers, we've been working with the driver team to expand and make the INF syntax for filter drivers consistent, because there were differences between network filter drivers and file system filter drivers. And so we do have offline support for filter drivers, injecting those in the image. Online support's not currently available. We are working on that as well and making that available in WSA as well. So just to recap a couple things, Server 2016 resolves the interface between dev and ops. You can see we've made some pretty firm statements on what the direction should be and what the tools should be used for install and for developing your code and packaging your code. And so, target NanoServer as you're writing your code. Create WSAs to install on NanoServer or Server Core. Deploy using package management. Package management gives you the flexibility to post things in repositories, pull it down and install it in one step. And then, we have been working a lot on reverse forwarders. As we've been working with various companies that are porting their code to NanoServer, we found additional reverse forwarders we've added. So if you're trying to use an API you think that should work on NanoServer with the reverse forwarders installed, something that allows you to access the file system or the network or the registry, common low-level functions, we've been adding more of those to reverse forwarders. So I actually looked, the user 32 reverse forwarder actually in TP4 went from about 25K up to, it's doubled in size or something like that. I'd have to go back and check. But it has increased quite a bit because we've been adding additional reverse forwarders into the system. So NanoServer is going to not be an LTSB. It's going to be a CBB, or a current branch for business. So we'll release updates 2 or 3 times a year. So if there are reverse forwarders missing or APIs you think should work, please give us that feedback. We'll keep enhancing those capabilities in the system. And then like I already mentioned, WSA, we're working on that as well. Package management is a fairly new feature in Windows Server as well. So there's changes coming there as well. So try all these things out, give us feedback. There's a user voice you can use, nanoserver@microsoft.com. And then there's a bunch of related sessions around NanoServer that are happening this week. So if you're interested in more details, please check that out. And I'll flip back to I guess I don't have the resources on that slide. All right, so that was all I had today. Please fill out your evaluations. I will open up for questions now. And thank you very much for coming. Yes.
What about the Azure support on this
one? So are you talking about running it as a VM in Azure or a container in Azure? That is available. So the question was, what about Azure support for NanoServer? So we had TP4 and TP5 were both available in the Azure Gallery. When server goes GA in mid-October, we will make NanoServer an option in the Azure Gallery as well. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Over here. What's that? The VC runtime. So we have a couple versions of the VC runtime available. The older ones are not supported on NanoServer right now. I don't remember off the top of my head which ones, but if you want to send an email to nanoserver@microsoft.com, I can give you the exact answer. I can give you a card here if you want to email me directly. I would recommend the latest compiler. The question was which compiler to use. I would recommend the latest one. Other questions? Sorry, it's hard to see with these lights if somebody's raising their hand. In the back? Yes?
So you mentioned IIS modules. Would you be able to use a WSA to deploy like a web application, or is that too complex?
Question was, would you be able to use a WSA to deploy a web application, or is that too complex? It depends on the web application. So let me give you a card if we should email and get more details, and we'll see if that's supported. So they've definitely got the modules working, and they've got some web applications, but depending on what you're doing. There was a question? Yes.
Why do you call it reverse for water?
That was a name the engineering team came up with, and it sort of stuck. It's not really very reverse. Yes, the question was, why is it called reverse forwarder? The engineering team decided to name it that, and it's just sort of stuck. Although it's not really a reverse, it is just forwarding downwards. Are there questions over there? So .NET framework in NanoServer is .NET Core only. So full .NET framework is not available. You need to port over to .NET Core. Question? There's a bunch of them actually in box with NanoServer, or yes, the plan is we'll make them available, the VC runtimes available as WSAs. Are there questions? Yes. So the question was, does WSA give you patching capabilities?
And self-healing like MSI.
WSA does not give you patching capabilities today, but that is on our roadmap. We want to behave much like an AppX app in client, where it can get updated without having to like uninstall or reinstall or reconfigure and all that, like sort of like an MSI would. So that is on the roadmap, but not available today. And another thing we want to add in WSA is one of the slides mentioned you can do inter-package dependencies. So if you have multiple WSAs, you can express dependencies across them. We don't have this yet, but we're working on it as the ability to express dependencies on inbox roles and features. So for your IIS module, you could say, this is dependent on IIS. And so if you tried to install that without having IIS there, it would auto-install IIS for you. Question? So the question is, can you install Centennial tools? So this, yes. Yes, so Centennial, anything written for Centennial can install on NanoServer, Server Core, Server with Desktop as well. So WSA has all the same capabilities, and we've been working with the Centennial team. So there's consistency between WSA and Centennial and any overlap there. Any other questions? I will hang around for a bit. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the conference.